This is the Skate Podcast on WEEI.com and the Radio.com app.
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins in the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Greg Hill Morning Show.
That's evidently what Ken Laird wants you to believe.
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
Everything gonna be all right?
Lace him up for some bees talk right now. It's the Skate Pod.
Sunday Skate, I'll give it a B, B plus.
On WEEI.
Holy, this is a big-time show.
It is a big-time show.
Time for another edition of the Skate Pod. You thought you were rid of us. That is incorrect. Incorrect. Ken Laird here, Matt Kalman at his palatial estate. I'm not sure where Matt lives, but he's there anyway. And where you are, at the Skate Pod on Twitter is where you can find us, and wherever great podcasts are still downloaded. I think they're still downloaded, Matt. In fact, maybe the podcast industry is booming right about now.
It probably should be, right?
We're brought to you by Red River Technology. Red River is enabling customers to transform beyond the expected from the cloud and big data to mobility and cybersecurity. And you need that right now. Red River can meet your business objectives. Thank you to Red River for continuing their coverage of the Skate Podcast. And you can download and subscribe wherever great podcasts are found. iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, Google Play, we are there for you. Now, Matt, the Sunday Skate Edition over the weekend with you, me, and Pete Blackburn was rudely interrupted by a cleaning crew. So we got about, that was never even posted. But I did want to pick up on something there to start that we were chatting about with Pete in terms of postseason awards, assuming this is like the last time we'll see the 2020 Bruins, and that was Team MVP. Remind me again where you stood. Who was the Bruins team MVP of 2020?
Yeah, I think I went with Pastrnak, and I definitely still would go with Pastrnak. I think Pete wanted to go with Marchand, but to me, you know, I guess they used to say chicks dig the long ball, and I think in my case, I dig the finishers and the guy who's scoring. You know, he was on pace to pass 50, you know, and do something that no Bruin had done in more than 20 years. And, you know, it's great that Marchand has emerged as one of the premier playmakers in the league, but to me, Pastrnak being the goal scorer, the finisher, the guy who they can, you know, lean on when their chips are down and can know that he can shoot almost from anywhere in the zone and to have a chance to score, to me, that's made the biggest difference in this team, you know, even from last year, to have a guy healthy being a natural goal scorer the way he is. You know, we've talked for years about them not having a natural goal scorer and how much they had to grind to score goals over the years, but this guy, you know, he has a little bit of a grind to his game, but mostly it's just, you know, beautiful goals, whether it's beautiful breakaways or beautiful shots.
It's a real shame that he is likely not going to get to 50 goals. I mean, I think we all feel like there's a distant possibility of playoffs, but the regular season, I mean, the chance is almost none, right? They're going to make up regular season games at this point.
Exactly. And then so, there's a lot of shames that go beyond what this team was doing. But, yeah, I mean, you're always going to know that he could have had the 50. But I think, you know, the way the game is going, the way the speed of the game is, the way the enforcement of the rules is, it's likely he'll be challenging this time next year too. I think this is a perennial 50-goal scorer, the Ovechkin-type scorer that every team would love to have. And the best part about it is that he has a supporting cast around him, and he also has, you know, a well-rounded game that's come a long way since he came in the league. So you're not going to see, you know, it's not going to be much of a drop-off. He's always going to be used in every situation except for penalty kill, and he's a threat every time on the ice. If he stays healthy, he'll be doing this every time. And, you know, like I said, there's so many regrets over what's going to happen here now. I mean, you know, will we see Chara again? What's the future hold for some of these other players? It's going to be interesting to see if they ever get back on the ice at all. I'm just planning for the worst, and I'll be pleasantly surprised if they ever do play again, but I don't see it happening.
I'll get back to that point you just made here in a second, but to finish up for Pasta, and because I agree with you, I wish I could debate here. Marchand had a hell of a season. In fact, at one point we had done the numbers of primary assists early on of Marchand on Pasternak goals, and there were plenty of them where he was the primary assist guy. But 20 power play goals, 10 game winners. I know he shoots a ton. Like comparing Pasta's shots to Marchand's, I think he about like doubles them up, 300 to 180 or something like that.
Sure.
Obviously, he's the trigger man. But still, take away the 20 power play goals, he still equals Marchand in he would have 28 goals non power play, and Marchand had 23. So
there you go.
I mean, he's still. I mean, it's not all about goals, but as you say, it is all about goals. And I think he is he's the MVP. Did we get into seventh player award? I think we were going to go there. We never actually did, you know, which is usually goes to the guy who showed the most improvement, right, to surprise you the most from one year to the next. Last year, I can remember stumping vehemently for Krejci.
Yep.
I guess, you know, in a way, you can make a case for Pasternak there.
Right.
But it's, you know, that's not typically the way you would go. Who would be your seventh player?
I mean, yeah, the Pasternak one seems to make the most sense to me because no one expected him to take this quantum leap and become a 50-goal scorer. I mean, think about it. We were always talking the last couple of years whether Marchand would get 40,
yep.
And now, you know, that's completely blown out of the water. Now it's all about Pasternak and how many he's going to get. And if you're thinking about which way the fans would vote, it would probably might go that way because they usually go for the star power. But it seems that what I've seen on Twitter, and I can't necessarily argue with it, I think people like Brandon Carlo, and the way he's emerged, the way he's come on this year, and I don't know how you quantify him exceeding expectations because he does so many things that don't get totaled up on the score sheet. But you know, you could say that, or you could go again with Halak in the crazy good year he's had mm-hmm. behind Tuukka, playing as sparingly as he does. But it's really hard to. It's kind of weird now when you're one of the top two or three teams in the league. You don't really have players that are exceeding expectations because the expectations are so high on everyone. So
yeah, the other two candidates to jump out, Lauzon, obviously, although he only played 19 games.
Sure.
But also Charlie Coyle, I think.
Yeah, that is one that I brought up. People were saying, though, that he kind of, you know, fit the bill for what he was. But I don't know. It's, again, it goes back to the things that don't show up on the score sheet. I mean, he might have the same amount of points that you expected from him, but the way he plays and becoming not only a penalty killer, but also a guy who's played a role in the power play and the way he protects the puck and kind of been a jack of all trades, playing some wing this year. I mean, there's definitely an argument to be made for that. And the fact that also, I don't know if this is part of the award, but just he's become kind of a leader on this team, a guy who, you know, is kind of one of the faces of wins or losses. He's out there, you know, taking the brunt of whatever's coming his way media-wise. He's really embraced being the hometown guy and being one of the faces of the team.
Yeah, I think as you talk there, that's convinced me. Charlie Coyle is the seventh player award. He is way more than I thought they were going to get from him at the trade deadline. I mean,
yeah.
In fact, he was kind of viewed in Minnesota. Wouldn't you say he was kind of viewed as either miscast or a dog? One of the two, like either the system's not fitting him.
Wasn't really a dog. It was because to me a dog would say something about effort. It was just that he never would shoot. And
that's
they
true.
Needed
that's
him
true.
To be more of an alpha dog, and he was kind of a passive kind of facilitator, you know. But he also was misused. He didn't get a lot of power play time, especially getting first power play time, and they shifted him to center and wing every other game. You know, there were certain guys there that would get their minutes, and then he would have to pick up the scraps. And so they clearly didn't think he had the talent to do what he's done now, or just weren't going to give him a shot.
Yeah,
definitely kind of. You know, I again, when they got him, I didn't think this was going to be a big deal because, A, I've seen so many guys, good players, come here back home and flop on their face, but also from what you heard in Minnesota, that maybe just those skills are kind of deteriorated. But you think about it, going back to his junior days, his college days, this was always supposed to be a guy who was supposed to be a high-end talent. I mean, he was a high first-round draft pick. This is kind of what you expected to get.
Now, before we get to some of the bleak scenarios that might play out here, Marty Walsh was on our morning show, on the Greg Hill Show this week, and I thought it was an interesting response that he had. He brought up, Curtis asked him, has he talked to the local teams, is there any discussion about playing games, even without fans, in the summer, any timetable? And I thought Walsh would blow it off, and he said, actually, yes, I've been talking to them.
I've spoken to the Red Sox, the ownership, and the Red Sox, and the Celtics, and the Bruins, and quite honestly, you know, I would love to see it's not my call, but I would love to see some type of sports even played in front of empty stadiums just for people to have a distraction. I think that, you know, we're all, you know, I'm a huge sports guy. I love sports. I love hockey. I love basketball. I love watching baseball. I love football. And, you know, when I go home at night, generally that's what I'm watching. You know, I have the NHL package to watch every game on the West Coast. And not having sports is a huge gap for a lot of people. And baseball came out, I think, yesterday that they won't start their season potentially till May. You know, NBA is kind of, I think, hinting at the fact that they might come back June or July, potentially. And the NHL really hasn't said much on it yet. So I think that's something that I think people need. You know, so I think we have to try and think about how do we move forward here.
Can you see that as a possibility? Now, I don't think people would be interested in just, like, exhibition games so much where you would get, like, the Providence guys up, the local guys, and split,
right.
You know, do a draft or something like that. But if the league felt it was safe enough, where you just had charter flights and you know, you quarantined your own players within their group. I don't know. It seems unlikely, but the fact that you have a mayor saying that, and maybe there was some interest in it, could you see that?
Well, that's what the playoffs will probably be, if they play them at all, right? I mean, even if it's a 24-team tournament, that's what you're talking about. You're talking about empty buildings, because you don't know how long this is going to last. And as long as there's not enough tests to go around, and people are going to keep popping up with it, and as long as people keep spreading it by not listening to the authorities, or, you know, it's going to keep going. And there's no idea, like, how you will ever, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, be able to have people in large gatherings again. Now, the only problem with that, even with the 2014 tournament, is we've already had one NHL player test positive, and so right. You don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I just saw a tweet from Larry Brooks. He confirmed that no Rangers or Knicks have been tested yet. So if they're not even testing some of these teams, you don't know how many guys on these teams might have it. I mean, how many teams just connected to Ottawa and Ottawa's locker rooms might have been exposed to it. And it certainly doesn't help that they're keeping the name quiet as if it's like upper body injury.
Yeah.
It's great that even in these times, the NHL is sticking to this, you know,
no, they didn't
vague,
really say
vague
that.
Assessment of things. Yeah. The NBA comes right and tells you the players, the NHL is hiding it. I don't know what the point of that is.
Well,
but
NBA got a million tests. I mean, I don't know how that happened. But, you know, if you're the Bruins, I mean, I'd be worried. You're sharing a facility with, you know, the Celtics who played the Jazz on that Friday
right.
night.
Right, exactly.
How
and we don't know
today?
That if the Bruins have been tested. For all we know, you know, something's going on. I mean, sometimes I guess they're saying that it takes up to 2 weeks for the symptoms to even show, right? So you have no idea what might be in store here. And that's why, that might be what it would look like to have teams just play in an empty building or something at some point. But it's so far down the road that at what point do you have to just give it up and say you can't do it? And I totally, you know, I sympathize with the mayor on that one. Clearly, you know, sports has gotten us through so many things, but this is shutting down sports. That's the whole point of it. It's not like anything we've ever faced.
The other story this week was, of course, Tom Brady. I don't know if you heard, he's heading to Tampa. Not been much coverage of that. But, you know, Mookie Betts has left, and you brought up the point, I think, as we were texting back and forth, that Pastrnak is like the premier player in town now.
That's for sure.
I saw somebody stumping for, might have been Nick Fryer, was stumping for, or maybe one of the athletic guys for, you know, Tatum, the Celtics. And I think those guys would be one, too. My bigger concern would be, if this is a trend, have we seen the last of, like, Bergeron? Is he going to suddenly announce his retirement, or Krejci, or Tuca? Or I mean, Chara obviously is a concern every year that goes by.
Yeah.
Hell, he's in, like, a dangerous category of 40-plus for the coronavirus. Not to wish ill on anybody. I am, too. But, you know, the older you get here and your immune system goes down. But do you get the sense any of those guys, with the way this has ended, let's say the season's over, and you go at it again next year, would they hang it up, or are they would they come back for one final run at least?
Yeah, I think they would definitely. I mean, we know Tuca has one more year left on his contract. We know Patrice has a couple years left. So
yeah.
I think these guys are playing it out. I don't see Patrice ever leaving. I mean, it's not oddly enough, regardless of what you think of the Jacobses, the core players of this team actually really do get along with him and respect him. I mean, Chara and Jeremy Jacobs are like buddies, you know. It's not a case where you're going to have a Kraft Brady or a Belichick Brady, you know, disagreement or whatever went down there. So
right.
I think in the case of Patrice and Zdeno, they both want to stay here. I think they love it here this much. They wouldn't think of leaving, nothing to prove somewhere else like Brady might be thinking. You know, when you come down to Tuca, I guess if the Bruins were to insult him with some sort of extension that they didn't meet his approval, he probably would go somewhere, because a goalie of his caliber, especially if a team has a Halak-type number two to pair with him, he'll definitely get his money and maybe even get some more years than the Bruins might be willing to go. So, and I don't think he necessarily has that loyalty as far as the way things have gone here, you know, for the fan base and some of the media scrutiny of him. And he'd probably love it to go play somewhere like San Jose or someplace like that, where he doesn't have to deal with that as much. But I think the core guys, like I said, they really do have a genuine loyalty to the ownership and the management here. I think they've bought into it for so long. I don't think that they'd be going anywhere. I think Zdeno Chara, assuming he wants it, as soon as he's done, he steps right into a front office position.
Well, that'd be interesting. Bumps Neely out.
Maybe he becomes like the heir apparent to Neely, or maybe just does something on the development side. You never know.
Yeah. Now, Maria from Watertown was lined up to join us right before we got shoved out of the building on Sunday morning. But she asked this question on Twitter, and it's a good one. Could the delay of the season have a potential impact on extending Torrey Krug? Or, in fact, you know, I think we should just extend that to the cancellation of the season. And, you know, yeah. Has Krug played his last game in a Bruins sweater?
That's the crazy part, right? It's going to be, if they decide, depending how long they wait to cancel the season, or even if they played that playoff tournament, you're going to have a very short turnaround from the end of it till draft and free agency. And you just got to wonder how much work Don Sweeney has put in to put in some kind of structure here to convince Torrey to stay, or if it's such a short period of time and the wooing period comes and somebody just throws some crazy money at him, it could be gone. I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all goes down. And there's so many things. You know, we talked about the regrets. I mean, I brought this up on the, I guess, the lost tape of Sunday Skate, but it seems to me that the NHL should put some sort of compensation in for teams that traded first-round draft picks for rentals that are not getting any, you know, bang for their buck. Maybe put in like
compensatory
round of the draft, you know, where maybe you pick like the teams that traded first rounders regardless of, and you just give them a sandwich pick somewhere between the second and third round or something to just replenish their, you know, replenish their coffers, because it's kind of not fair that they went all in on a season that's not going to end and got nothing for it.
Oh, I see what you mean. Just for 1 year.
Yeah, just for 1 year to say, you know, here's an extra draft pick somewhere, even if it's at the end. I mean, there's seven rounds of the draft, and most teams don't even pay attention to what they're doing in the seventh round. But, I mean, we've seen seventh rounders make it. Maybe if you just, instead of having all the guys who don't get drafted free agents, maybe you just give them picks, extra picks in the sixth or seventh round, just to have them, you know, have the players become part of their organization without having to bid for them in free agency. It's kind of really stinks, and that goes back to Torrey too. It's kind of like he was supposed to be an own rental, right? So you didn't get your bang for the buck. Does that maybe put more pressure on you to sign him because you decided to stick with him out this way? And it's just, it seems like the teams, it always comes out this way, the teams that are competing the most and teams that are trying the hardest get penalized.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
well,
I don't think a team like Ottawa should benefit from this, you know. So.
Well, but in the bizarre situation of trading a first to get rid of Backes, you would get like a compensatory pick for using a first to get rid of a player. I mean,
I guess.
They almost don't deserve it.
Yeah, it is harder. There'd have to be a lot of negotiation. I mean, they still got a player out of that, right? They got a player that they thought was going to be a difference maker. So,
oh yeah, can't wait for the next full year of Andre Kasha. That'll get us through this level.
Well, that's just it. Maybe because Kasha signed, maybe the Bruins wouldn't fall into that category. But if you're talking, I think I keep thinking about Vancouver and Toffoli, and it's just like, geez, you know,
yeah,
they just got, you know, they decided to do something that most people would have suggested they didn't, right? Because so many people thought, well, they're not really competing. What are they doing? But I give them credit, just like I gave Columbus credit the year before for going all in. It's like, I'd rather you see you trying to win than trying to play the middle ground or something.
Who else gave up first?
And then this happens.
The Islanders gave up a first for Pedro.
Yep. Well, at least they re-signed him, so maybe that's not as bad also. But there are just so many weird things that kind of happen. It's kind of difficult to get a feel. You know, and actually, even with the draft order, are you just going to do the thing of drafting the draft order just based on points percentage? Well, I don't know. Maybe you should almost feel like you should expand the lottery a little bit and just give some other teams a chance to move up, add some spice to this and kind of give some teams benefits. Teams that were playing hard last year, you know, a lot of those teams in those middle ground teams were fighting for playoff spots.
Yep.
You know, maybe give them a little more of a chance to get in that lottery and maybe move up and reward their efforts, because otherwise, you're just kind of rewarding the teams that were tanking last year.
Tampa would get a first, you know, or a compense back for the Blake Coleman trade, which some people felt.
Well, he signed too, so maybe you wouldn't have to. Maybe that, not, you know, maybe if we're just looking at rentals, it wouldn't even be that big of an impact. But
interesting theory. Yeah, yeah.
It's just kind of weird because, like, you made all these trades, you make all these moves, and it's just like, oh, geez, what did we do any of this for? You know, it's. At least be glad that you didn't give up, like, you know, a pick for a Kovalchuk, because it's like, that's a total waste for sure, you know?
The other part of it is, if they do play in the summer, I saw people in Pittsburgh tweeting about this from my old Pittsburgh media colleagues, like Jake Gensel may be healthy enough to play. I mean, Chris Sale may be pitching, and, you know,
Chris Kreider. Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys. You know, Jacob Markstrom, there were a lot of guys. And, you know, even with the Bruins, Carlo and Krug are going to be rested, but they're also going to be out of shape.
That's
the thing, too. I just hope the Players Association, clearly there's a financial incentive to come back. There's so much revenue riding on this, and so much of the players' compensation is based on revenue. But this is not like coming back after the summer. It's not even like coming after a lockout. These guys can hardly do anything.
Right.
How many of these guys have enough of a home gym to duplicate what it takes to play hockey, never mind at an NHL level?
I was going to say, Kevin Miller may be the healthiest guy of the bunch. He'll be like working exactly. out up until return date. Now, you put
you don't even know if they're going to get to skate anytime. I mean, you can really have to base it on when they can skate at all. And then when you go back and you look at that, the 04-05 lockout that wiped it the whole season, I mean, the teams came back in 05, and now guys hadn't been training as hard then as they train now in the offseason, but missing a whole season, some of them played in some minor leagues, some played overseas, whatever. They came back in those first, like, 3-4 months of the 05-06 season was groin injury central. Everyone had a groin injury. So, you know, you got to be really careful.
You put up a poll on the SkatePod Twitter. Who do you think the Bruins' toughest first-round opponent would be? That was a terrible poll because you put an other in the category.
Yeah.
Panthers, Blue Jackets, Islanders, and other. Well, other won, which is still, it's a terrible poll. But and most of the responses were coronavirus is their toughest opponent, of course.
Right.
The easy punchline. Couple write-in votes for Carolina. But the Islanders, if you scratch that from the list, would be the winner. 29%. Blue Jackets, 26%. Florida Panthers, 16%. Although E.J. Raddick, our guest last week, said that was his pick for the toughest opponent. Do you think, but the hoi polloi say the Islanders, who would be the matchup right now on the point percentage standings, that would be the Bruins' toughest draw, 1-8.
Well, I think most of the people with other, the ones that weren't coronavirus were Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Maybe they were leaning more toward Carolina, and I think that might have actually won the poll. But I don't, you know, it's hard to pick a toughest because I really don't respect any of the teams that are in that bunch. I mean, you know, Columbus may be the hardest one just based on their work ethic and the fact that they just will have nothing to lose type thing. You know, they're kind of a Cinderella team that's kind of hard to face. But the way the Islanders played since the trade deadline and the way Florida was playing, we saw the way the Bruins handled them. It's not that scary at all if you think about it. I mean, I guess if you look at Carolina and the way they gained experience last year, that might boost them. But we're not really looking at, like, the Toronto-Tampa danger zone in the first round the way we have in the past couple years.
I mean, the Islanders on paper look like a dangerous team, but the Bruins skunked them 4-0 that afternoon.
Yeah, and they haven't lost to them in like 3 years.
Yeah.
So it's hard to give them much respect and, you know, they just don't quite have that. They don't have that superstar player either that you're worried about containing, or they don't have the superstar goalie. So it's hard to really, you know, get much fear for them.
Well, you had stories to write about, though, this week, because Jeremy Swayman, the Bruins' fourth-round pick from 2017, signed his entry-level contract. His junior season in Maine is done. Wiggy, by the way, was advocating for all these athletes in college to get another year of eligibility, so maybe he'll be a junior again, if that's the case.
Something like that.
But how big of a deal is this for the Bruins to get him locked up?
It's huge, because, you know, Daniel Vladar has come a long way this year, and Kyle Kizer, the other prospect, has been out most of the year with an injury. So, you know, Swayman could actually leapfrog Kizer just by signing that deal and getting him into the pros and getting his experience. That's kind of accelerates the process here as far as looking forward into a world where they might not have Halak and where Tuukka, you know, may or may not be back after next year. So it's great. I mean, obviously, you know, the stats speak for themselves with him now. We saw Zane McIntyre kind of came out of college the same way and was getting every, you know, college goaltender award and put up great numbers and kind of flopped as a pro prospect. But it seems like this kid maybe has some of the extra tools that Zane didn't have as far as just athleticism and, you know, off ice type demeanor and maturity. So It's a big deal for sure. I mean, now you have a little depth, a little competition in the organization, and you can, you know, plot out things. And I still say they're going to need a veteran for next year, whether it's a lock or someone else, just to back up. And you hope that maybe you get somebody on a 2-year deal that you can expose to Seattle, because they're going to have to start thinking down the road that way. And But it's a great sign considering they haven't drafted and developed a goaltender in 1,000 years, if you think about it.
Well, Malcolm Subban, who's...
And Andrew Raycroft. Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Subban played for Chicago this year, right? He got a couple games in.
Yeah, he got traded to Chicago, and there's a reason Vegas traded him. He's kind of never lived up to the billing of the future number one that he was. And that's not his fault. Very few people had him going in the first round when the Bruins took him, and that never made any sense when they did it.
And you wrote about an NCAA free agent defenseman, Nick Wolf. Who is he?
Yeah, he's kind of like a guy that you don't necessarily see in the game these days. 6'5", 220 pound, kind of an Adam McQuaid style defenseman. But I guess he's worked hard on his game. He came to Bruins development camp 2 years in a row, so mustn't have been too hard to coax him to coming here. Obviously, he had his heart set on the Bruins, and when he became a free agent, he signed in practically no time, but played with Carson Coleman at UMD, and so the Bruins love those UMD guys. They're winners, and they're all Carson Coleman-type guys, the guys that the coaches love. They'll do everything right. Maybe don't do everything great, but do everything right and listen to the coach. They're coachable, so again, add some depth in the back end. I'm not sure that guys of that ilk are going to be very useful, but maybe they will be because I talk so much about Brendan Dillon, right? I don't want to, argue with myself on that. Clearly there's space for a guy like that on every defense corps now, and maybe down the road, two, three years from now, maybe he becomes a guy that's at least a sixth or seventh guy.
Well, it's interesting times, Matt. We'll see how this goes. You and I have a goal in mind to keep pumping out an episode one a week. We're going to be done with the weekend show here for a little bit. But I hope we do get some stuff to talk about. I thought we had enough this episode. But I see, like some of the brethren in our sports media world, the Hockey News laid off 8 full-timers today. So it's
right.
It is scary times out there, my friend.
Absolutely.
So we'll keep our nose to the grindstone here. And hopefully, sooner rather than later, we get this virus corralled. Blackburn stabbed us in the back again. How about that? He went on with Marinovsky yet again.
Pete, it's not too hard to get Pete to go on a podcast. So.
He's easy.
Say that.
He's also promised since Brady left town to pose a nude picture on Twitter.
Oh God!
So I'm sure we can live down to that billing.
I'll have to remember to mute him.
All right, Matty, stay safe. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good.